Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The NCAA announced earlier today widespread sweeping changes to college basketball's bylaws, its recruiting calendar, and, in an evolutionary step forward, new legislation that gives more entitlement to student-athletes. And all of that is true. But it is also mostly meaningless because this is the day where the NCAA created a lot of big headlines, but they didn't really solve any problems. I wrote a column back in April, and we've talked about this many times before, predicting that what happened today was going to happen. It's not because I'm a psychic, but it's because I understand how the NCAA works. I don't care in what aspect of life you're living, whether it's this or your personal life or whatever. If you've got a problem, you can't solve it, and I'm trying to avoid
that rap lyric
quoting Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, I was feeling it coming on.
But if you've got a problem, if you want to solve it, you first have to identify what the problem actually is, and you have to speak honestly about what the problem is, and then you go, okay, how do we fix that problem? And the NCAA's ultimate problem when it comes to high-level college athletics, specifically football, but for these purposes, and men's basketball. The problem is its strict hold on amateurism. That's the problem. You've got too many prospects who are worth too much money to too many different people. They're worth something to agents. They're worth something to financial advisors. They're worth something to shoe companies. They're worth something to college coaches. They're worth something to universities in general. So you're never going to be able to stop capitalism. It's never been clean, and these changes today aren't going to make it clean. But the disappointing part, and let me be clear, not surprising part, but disappointing part, is that you can't even with a straight face pretend that any of these changes are going to change any of the issues in the sport. Because like Norlander wrote, and he's correct, this is undeniably a reaction to the ongoing investigation run by the FBI that was first acknowledged last September. And if you go back to then and even chronicle everything that's happened since then and identify what was actually happening, what the FBI actually exposed, then you have to ask yourself, how does anything announced today address any of those issues? I don't even mean end them, because that's probably impossible, but just minimize them. There's no good answer. They failed spectacularly. Because what the FBI investigation exposed back in September, if you go look at the people who have been indicted, people who have lost their jobs, it's connected to these things. Money people paying off families, paying off coaches to try to gather influence over pro prospects. There's literally nothing today, no announced change, that's going to have any impact on that. It's shoe companies creating relationships with the best prospects in the country and then often using those relationships to create influence over where they end up attending college. There's nothing in the proposed changes today that addresses that at all. There's college coaches on campuses, family members accepting extra benefits. There's nothing in the changes today that addresses that at all. Instead, it's just changes that sound big, create nice headlines, but if you look at the fine print and actually understand the issues in college basketball, what any reasonable person will conclude is that this isn't going to change a thing. For instance, one of the big headlines today, it sounds nice, I can admit, it's written this way. The NCAA now, for the first time ever, will allow prospects to have agents. This is something people thought was sensible for forever. Because in what other aspect of life do we identify a 16 or 17 year old who's uniquely gifted and then tell them, but you can have no professional advise you, handle your contracts, handle your career. Like when somebody identifies Justin Bieber as a teenager, as a uniquely gifted young man, one of the first things they tell him to do, or his parents to do, you find somebody to manage your money, you find somebody to manage your career. It would be insane not to. I read a story at some point over the past couple days. There's a 16-year-old girl, just signed a massive record deal. She's a millionaire now. And it all started with, she was on SoundCloud, built up an audience, went on tour with somebody. Her fan base grew, and a record company just said, okay, we're investing in this girl. I promise you, even if her world as it is today was unimaginable to her a year ago, at this point, she's got somebody handling the money. She's got somebody handling contracts. She's got somebody handling everything. It would be crazy not to. I'm not Justin Bieber. I'm not that 16-year-old girl. I don't negotiate any of my contracts. I got somebody to do that for me. I don't handle my money. I got somebody to do that for me. I'm a 41-year-old college-educated man, and I recognize that those are things I need other people to do. And yet when we identify Marvin Bagley at 15 years old as somebody who is going to make tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, we say, but you cannot have agent representation. You got to navigate this on your own. And so often, as is the case with these types of prospects, they come from backgrounds where there is nobody who understands how to make these big types of decisions. Maybe if you're a MUS graduate and the child of MUS graduates and the grandchildren of MUS graduates, you come from a family that's equipped to maybe guide you down a path like this. But if you're from a single parent home, maybe the first person to ever even attend college in your family, the idea that we're then asking you to make these big types of decisions without proper representation is just, it's always been wrong. And so when the NCAA announces today, we're going to allow them, these elite prospects, to have those types of relationships, it makes for a nice headline. Because that's what you're going to read in most newspapers tomorrow, on most websites tonight. NCAA to allow prospects to have agent representation. But then you get to the fine print. All that means from the NCAA's perspective, the way they've defined it, is that if you are identified as an elite prospect, then an agent can advise you. But an agent can't advance your money. An agent can't provide you with benefits in any way other than throughout the selection process. They can fly you in for a meeting. They can pay for a meal. But that's it. And then if you are in college and you enter the NBA draft or apply for it, you can then develop a relationship with an agent. But it's under the same circumstances. And then if you decide to withdraw from the draft and go back to school, you have to terminate in a legal way your relationship with that agent. Now think about this. To the extent that agents have been an issue in amateur basketball, and they have been, it's not rooted in any of the stuff I'm talking about. No agent has lost his license for talking or advising an amateur prospect. No agent has lost his license for providing a meal. You know what Andy Miller got in trouble for? Christian Dawkins got in trouble for? Mm-hmm. It was paying prospects because they wanted to represent them someday. That's still going to go on. You want to know why? Because it's hard to get caught if you're smart, and because it's one of the best investments you can make. I've told you before, it remains true today. About 90% of top 10 high school players in the country every year end up in the NBA, one way or another. if you can invest in them at the rate of $10,000, $20,000, sometimes even $100,000, $200,000, it is money well spent. There's no legal investment I could make tomorrow that is probably better than it, making an investment in R.J. Barrett, the number one freshman in the country at Duke. Like, if you told me I could invest $100,000 legally in whatever I wanted to today, Twitter, Disney, doesn't matter, or Gary, you can invest $100,000 in R.J. Barrett, and when he turns pro, you'll get to represent him. The R.J. Barrett investment is way better. That ain't changing. So how does this rule that the NCAA changed today change that reality? It doesn't at all. Exactly what's been going on with agents and players and summer league teams, going to continue to go on with agents and players and summer league teams. The other big headline. Now if players go undrafted, they enter the NBA draft, they go undrafted, they'll have the opportunity to return to school. Sounds good, right? And I guess in theory it is good. Having the option to do that is better than not having the option to do that. But then there's the fine print. Doesn't really change anything, because here's the fine print. You have to maintain your amateur status, obviously, because they're tied to this flawed core. And you have to be invited to the combine. And then if you go undrafted on the Thursday night of that NBA draft, you have till Monday at 5 o'clock to announce that you're going back to school, let your administration know, and you needed to have followed the proper protocol to even be eligible for that. So you go, okay, well, how many kids is that going to affect each year? Like 5 or 6 total. Total. I think the list from this past draft of players who would qualify that is like 5 or 6 or 7. Here's the other problem. The deadline is the following Monday of the NBA draft. Anybody who follows the Grizzlies or any franchise on draft night knows that the way it works is this. The draft ends and you immediately start seeing Woj or some other prominent NBA reporter tweet that this player who went undrafted has agreed to play summer league with the Utah Jazz. This player who went undrafted has agreed to play summer league with the Chicago Bulls. This player who went undrafted has agreed to play summer league with the San Antonio Spurs. And so these young people's pro possibilities, they do not go away. Any player good enough to be invited to the combine is going to have pro prospects, pro possibilities, even if he went undrafted on draft night. Literally everyone. If you're good enough to get invited to the combine, you will be good enough to have a professional opportunity somewhere, even if you go undrafted. So if you are somebody who wanted to be a professional, that's why you went through the process, it's why you entered the NBA draft and remained in it, and you don't get drafted, clearly you're disappointed, but then you immediately get a call from somebody saying, hey, the San Antonio Spurs want to invite you to summer league, you still think maybe there's a chance. And then there's probably somebody also telling you, hey, listen, this NBA thing might work out, might not work out right now, but we can get you a G League deal. You can work your way to it. We can get you a two-way deal. You can work your way through it. We can get you an overseas deal. You can work your way through it. How many are going to turn that down to go back to the school that they didn't want to be at anyway?
No, that's a good option.
It's a small, small number.
Yeah.
I would bet once that's implemented,
yeah,
that the number of players who actually qualify for it and then take advantage of it, I'm not being hyperbolic, one, two, three a year. It's a nice headline. It doesn't really do anything. And then the other big one is to the recruiting calendar. They have taken away 2 of the traditional 5-day evaluation periods in July and replaced one with nothing in July and replaced the other one with a camp in July. Now, what they think is that we've got a problem with grassroots basketball. We've got a problem with the shoe companies connected to grassroots basketball. And if we limit the number of opportunities in July that college coaches will be able to attend non-scholastic / shoe company associated events, then that'll bring back some of the power from the shoe companies and we'll get this stuff cleaned up. The problem is there isn't anybody who understands how the shoe companies work and how these grassroots programs work who would actually agree with that. You know who would agree with that? Condoleezza Rice, who has never worked in that scene. I'm not even sure she's been to a grassroots event. And I say that with an incredible amount of respect for Condoleezza Rice. She is a brilliant, accomplished person who has been prominent and had prominent roles in this country for a long time. But this ain't her scene. She doesn't understand it. She's never lived in it. And the idea that they didn't invite enough, if any, people who do understand it into the room to help explain it was among their first mistakes. Because these shoe companies develop these relationships with these grassroots teams not when kids are seniors in high school or juniors in high school. They're playing from 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. And these events are still going to happen. I was in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago. It was on a Wednesday night. A gym was packed. And there was a grassroots basketball game going on. And if you would have told all the coaches that they're not allowed to be there, the players would have still been there. The fans would have still been there. You'd have still been able to charge $10 at the door. Somebody would still, whether it's ESPN, FS1, CBS Sports Network, put it on television. That's not going away. All you're doing is removing the coaches from the gym. But the stuff that's going on in the gym, not going away. So what does that mean? Whatever ties the grassroots programs have on these players, whatever ties the shoe companies have with these players, they will remain just as strong as they've always been. And you'll take the coaches out of those gyms and put them in a camp setting that literally everybody who evaluates basketball players says is not a good way to evaluate basketball players. John Calipari was quoted about this last week. He said, the beautiful thing about Peach Jam and Las Vegas is that you have players playing on teams, playing with coaches who know what they can and cannot do, playing with teammates who are familiar with them. And so, and I thought this was really smart for John to put it this way. He said, they start the evaluating process for us because the players who are supposed to be shooting, shoot. The players who aren't supposed to be shooting, don't shoot. The players who are supposed to be playing, play. The ones who aren't supposed to be playing, they don't play. So we're already like, we've weeded out the guys who aren't available to us. Like if you're sitting at the end of the bench for your grassroots team, or even not starting for your grassroots team, I know from the jump you're not good enough to play at Kentucky. Now I go into a camp setting, I don't know who's who. Here's the other problem. They don't know each other. The coaches who are working with them don't know them. And yet they're putting them in game situations. Hey, go play with these four guys you've never met for a coach who doesn't know what you can and cannot do. How am I supposed to evaluate what's going on? It's not better. It's change for the sake of change. And it also, and I've hammered this point home a million times, decreases the opportunity for young people. And for what? To replace it with an inferior event to theoretically remove power from shoe companies that you're not actually going to remove. The story of Mike Dom is a perfect example. I've told it before, but bear with me. He's a senior at South Dakota State. He's an All-American, two-time Summit League Player of the Year. And if he stays healthy this season, he's going to end up as one of the 10 best scorers in Division I men's basketball history. He's had an incredible career. Heading into July of his senior year of high school, he had zero Division I scholarship offers. The reason is because he was from rural Nebraska. Played for a grassroots team, but it was not one that played on the EYBL circuit, not one that played on the Adidas circuit. It was just a team. He was just a guy. He could clearly play, but it's a little bit like if you can really sing, but you only do it in the shower and nobody ever hears you, nobody can know if you can sing or not. Nobody would ever know. Mike Dom was singing in a shower. Nobody ever saw him. But in the last evaluation period, in July, the one that's now being eliminated, he was out in Las Vegas. They were playing against a team from Florida, had Taco Fall on it, 7'6" player for UCF. Because he was there, some Division I coaches were there. Just happened to be in the gym. They weren't there to see Mike Dom, they were there to see Taco Fall. But Mike Dom made 12 three-pointers in that game. And South Dakota State's coaches were there. They saw a 6'8 kid who had just made 12 three-pointers, so hey, that's good enough. They invite him to campus. He goes to campus. he commits, and now he's an All-American who's going to be one of the top 10 scorers in the history of college basketball if he stays healthy when his career is done. Listen to what I'm about to say. It's not hyperbole. It's 100% true. The Mike Dom story is impossible with the changes that the NCAA made today. Mike Dom would have never been able to play at Peach Jam because he would have never been invited to Peach Jam. That's the first week of July. One of these camps at the end of July that's going to replace the Las Vegas events and the end of the month events, he would have never got invited to those. Nobody knew who he was. He would have remained in anonymity, went to a Division II school, NAIA school. Instead, he's having one of the best college careers at the Division I level of all time. And it would be impossible thanks to these NCAA changes. I would challenge anybody on that committee to try to explain to me how decreasing opportunities for young players is helping the sport of college basketball, how limiting the number of players coaches can see both intentionally and unintentionally is good for college basketball. Name me one thing that's in any federal indictment that's come out in the past 10, 11 months that will be fixed by any change you made today. It doesn't exist. I've said it a million times. I'll say it once more. Until they're willing to address the issue of amateurism in the sport, they can do all the window dressing they want, create all the little headlines they want. They don't fix a problem. They don't fix a thing. Because they think that everything I've just explained and then torn apart, plus the idea of harsher penalties, is going to help clean up the sport of college basketball. But I would counter with this. When has harsher penalties ever cleaned up the sport of college basketball? They've been adding rules and penalties forever. It's never worked. Never worked. And you want to know why? It's because the coaches who are willing to cross that line and violate rules to get prospects are going to still be willing to do it. Because, as has always been the case, and is probably more so today than ever because of the contracts involved, the possible reward for cheating far outweighs any risk of cheating for two reasons. The reward's massive. It can get you literally tens of millions of dollars. And the risk is minimal because it's very hard to get caught. Almost none of the people who cheat get caught. Some do, but most don't. It's a little bit like why people every night in this city and country, in any bar that you could walk into, have drinks, get into a car, and drive home. Essentially, they're weighing risk-reward. You are every time you do it. What's the reward? The reward is you get your car home, you don't have to pay for an Uber, you don't have to wake up the next day, go find your car. That's the reward. The risk is, if I get caught, I'm going to go to jail. But then you take it a step further and you say, but I'm probably not going to get caught. Not that drunk. I can keep between the lines. Probably not. I mean, my license is renewed. My tag's good. I got tail lights. I know that if I get caught, I'll pay a price, but I'm probably not going to get caught. So the reward outweighs the risk. To be clear, it's a stupid thing to do, but people do it every night. That's my point. Even though you know if I get pulled over, I am in big trouble, people do it every night. Why? Because the risk is far outweighed by the reward. Same thing with college basketball. You can threaten lifetime bans and tournament bans and show causes. The guys who are willing to cheat are still going to be willing to cheat. The guys who won't. The guys who will. There's nothing they did today that's going to change any of that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.